Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we're taking a look at the health and well-being of Louisiana's restaurant workers. No one knows better than Leah Chase just how tough a life spent in a restaurant kitchen can be on the human body. Leah talks about her own mistakes made along the way and has some great advice for today's young restaurant workers. Then nutritionist Molly Kimball and Tableau chef Ben Thibodeau describe the amazing lifestyle changes Ben's achieved by following the Eat Fit NOLA program. And chef Chris DeBar, who has spent 30 years in restaurant kitchens, now finds himself both unable to work and unable to get the health care he so desperately needs. Here comes an in-depth look at the healthcare situation of restaurant professionals on this week's Louisiana Eats. Leah Chase is recognized worldwide as the queen of Creole cuisine, and in many ways, she's the heart and soul of New Orleans itself. Now in her 90s, Leah has spent 68 years in the kitchen of Dookie Chase Restaurant, doing everything from making the roux to mopping the floors, all to her exacting standards. Leah always has time to make the rounds in the dining room, greeting friends old and new, while sharing her sage advice. She's an expert on the toll that the restaurant kitchen takes on the human body, especially that of the female variety. Leah sat down with us recently, filled with advice for those who have chosen to share her profession in the dangerous workplace a restaurant kitchen can be. Leah's whole philosophy can be summed up by the title of her last book, And Still I Cook.
That means no matter what you do, if you're in this restaurant business like I am, no matter what you do on the outside, or who you do it for, or how many other things you have to do, still you come back to cooking. Still you cook, you know. And to me, that's my life. But it can be something else again. You know, particularly with women, Poppy, women don't take care of themselves properly. And we overdo. We do so much. A man will do so much and he will stop. Women don't do that. They will do what they have to do here, what they have to do home, what they have to do as a mother, what they have to do as a wife. So that makes her life and her job a little bit harder to deal with. It's harder on her body, it's harder. But that's the life of a woman. If you, whatever job you choose, and in my position, the job I chose was one that would eat away at you if you don't take care of self. I need to tell women, the lifestyle you live, you have to take sometimes and think about yourself a little bit. Think about how you, for instance, in my case, you know, I would come in this kitchen, I would just come in here to work. I had my in those days you wore a white uniform to work, and I had a white uniform, maybe would wear the $2.99 tennis shoes, you know, and maybe no stockings on my legs, that kind of thing, walking on a hard floor, working for hours. Now, wasn't that stupid of me?
Yeah.
I should have had some support hose on my legs. I should have had a good shoe on my foot and know how to take care of myself, but I didn't. You know how, but you just don't stop to do it.
And right now, in fact, I'd say probably if we had to look at the damage that the life in the kitchen has done to your body, that's the thing that today, at the age of 90, you're suffering with the most, right?
I'm suffering with my legs the most because I didn't do the proper things. You know, you just get in there and you're just going, I should have had some support hose on, standing on your legs all day long. You need that tight fit, but you don't do that. You don't do that. You don't take care of your feet, which is, people tickle me. They go to the fingernail place and they get fingernails and they get all things. Feet, take care of feet first because they have to move you. And I had one woman who worked here. I'll never forget this woman, Bridget Castle. She was Aretha Castle's mother. And she would come to work neat. She was a bartender. She would come to work neat in her uniform, but she always wore her support stockings. She always had those stockings on, and she always had a good support shoe on. And she used to always say, Miss Chase, you better do this. She was from Tennessee, and that's the way she talked. Miss Chase, you better do this. Miss Chase, look and soak your feet at night. Do this. But did Miss Chase do that? No. Stupid Miss Chase just went on doing what she had to do and forget about herself. You cannot do that.
And then, of course, the kitchen itself, aside from the physical toll that it takes on your body, it's a place that is just filled with potential terrible accidents.
It is.
And you, I can think, right?
Potential terrible accidents.
Potential terrible accidents.
I was burned one time. Miss Chase.
Tell me that burn story.
Miss Chase herself want to be so perfect about the food she served, so perfect about the iced tea. I want this iced tea steeped in boiling water. I don't want you to give me this half-stepping tea. Give me this tea steeped in boiling water. So what stupid Miss Chase does is she takes the 3 gallons of boiling tea, put it, goes over her head to put it on the shelf, missed the shelf. Bam, tea all over me, all over the hot boiling water, all over me. So, now whose fault is that? Stupid Miss Chase's fault.
And
don't do that.
Miss Chase ended up in the hospital.
Ended up in the hospital. Already had ulcers. Already had ulcers. So the burn didn't do the ulcers any good. I was in fits, all that kind of thing. But, again, take care of self. Ask somebody to help you up with this. Or why does it have to be so perfect? Because I want everything to be perfect for my customer. I want this and I want that and I want this and I want that. So sometimes you don't have to be so perfect. You know?
And you know, healthcare is such an issue right now. It's on the tip of everybody's tongue. And I really don't have a clue what your healthcare situation was like and how you were even affording the doctoring going on that was necessary, that was happening. Because when you're having all these accidents, all these things must have been costing some money, Leah.
Well, we did have insurance here, you know, and then I could do that. You know, I could use the insurance here. It was all, most of it was done on the job anyway. So those are the things I have. But at this age in my life, I really try to be more careful because it is terrible to get really sick, and it's awful for some people. And then you're sicker because you don't know how you're going to pay for it. You know, it's a worry there.
Leah, what is it that causes chefs to make these stupid mistakes?
Well, the thing is, they enjoy their work. They want to satisfy that customer. So they will do stupid things. You know, men, they drink. They think that's going to cover up their tiredness. You know, I had a chef who used to bring his bottle of vodka every day to work.
Oh, Lord.
Old Nate Burton could drink cut a sock under the table. But they do that, and they think that that's going to make their work easier. So all that, destroying their own body, trying to serve somebody else. They want to serve people. They want their food to be perfect all the time. And that's why they do stupid things sometimes.
Well, with a job that is so high risk, Why do you think restaurant workers don't get the proper treatment?
Because they're not looked on as professional people. They're not looked upon as doctors and lawyers. They just think, well, this is a cook, you know. But it is a high profession. It is something that, you know, you got to do to make the rest of the world tick. And that is important. The profession is not looked on as it should be. A chef should have more acclaim than he has. He's just becoming to get his recognition and his acclaim as a professional person. That is just coming about in the past few years, you know. But they are professional people. They do great jobs. So, and it's just not looked upon as a great job.
Leah, what advice do you have personally for restaurant workers about their health?
I say take care of the health. If you're a waitress, please wear proper shoes. Please wear a stocking that will support your legs. Please do that. It may not look pretty on you, but it's comfortable on you and it's for your health. Take care of your health. You cannot do that all the time. It's a job that you have to do. You have to stand on your feet all the time. You're in front of fires all the time. You're cooking with things. So be careful and take care of self.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Will do.
All right.
Thank you, Leah.
All right. Thank you.
Leah Chase, a New Orleans legend. When we come back from a short break, Chef Chris DeBar describes his personal journey in search of health care for a chronic injury acerbated by time on his feet in the restaurant kitchen. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. You may know Chef Chris DeBar and his distinctly delicious food from the Delicious, Green Goddess, and Serendipity restaurants. Recently, Chris has had to stop working due to an accident that slowly debilitated him. Chris sat down with us to illustrate the incredibly difficult maze many Louisiana hospitality workers must navigate just to get the health care they desperately need.
Well, I'm actually fit as a fiddle in most regards, like health-wise, but about a year and a half ago, I injured my knee, slipped off a curb, put duct tape on it. It was bad. I saw some white stars, and it was pretty painful and limited me working. I went to see a chiropractor because I didn't have insurance at the time. And my insurance as a self-employed person, being the owner of a business, is crappy anyway. And he said, oh, just rehab it. And I did for a while, and it started to feel better. Then I started a new project with Serendipity, which didn't turn out so well for me or my knees. Didn't really, you know, make the money I needed to address it and was busy trying to keep things going. I mean, I was in denial. I mean, I think all cooks have a view of themselves as indestructible. I've known some other good cooks who died really way too young and probably ignored many warning signs. And I was, in my own case, felt fine, except my knees were killing me. So I was like, well, it'll get better. Well, it never did. When I finally got to see an orthopedist through the musician's clinic, he said, you have the knees of an 80-year-old who's been working hard labor. It's not really weight, he says. You know, I've lost some weight and all that. He says, it's really probably a genetic thing. You know, just ate the cartilage and it's bone on bone, and that means I can't pivot and turn, don't have the stamina to rock and roll on a line like I have done for 30 years. And, you know, that's the thing about being a cook. Your body is your instrument. You know, yes, you have your mind, your knives, different tools, and the joy of, you know, transforming vegetables and meats and seafood into something wonderful takes time.
Chris, give us some examples of what working in a restaurant kitchen can do to the human body.
Well, I always say that cooking is time and effort equals love. The time and the effort go into long hours and a lot of physical work with your hands, standing on your feet. Another thing I love to say about the cooking profession is that basically we're firebugs, you know, we're barely conditioned psychopaths who like to set stuff on fire. You know, we have these sharp knives and a culture of bravura acts and daring, and we do things that other people don't understand how to do. So it's kind of its own tribe. So we spend a lot of time manipulating ingredients, prepping one thing after another. I mean, if you're going to have a menu of 18 to 25 items every day, it's a cycle of never stopping prep work to make sure everything is fresh, that you're going to sell stuff. So it's checking in the produce. It's cutting the fish. It's dealing with all your different purveyors. It's lifting stuff into the right places. It's pulling stuff off the shelves and cooking it. It's prepping so that you're always having fresh stuff. It's walking out to meet the guests. And, you know, the guys in the front of the house have just as much work to do, taking plates and bussing plates and running around to take care of guests all over the dining room. I mean, it's a physical world, you know?
And it's also an extraordinarily long day.
Yeah, for an executive chef, it's pretty common. 12-hour days are pretty much a norm. If you're the business owner, too, like I've been, you also have paperwork. You know, So when the day is done, you have a glass of wine and you knock out all the paperwork that goes with it. Got to go through it and do everything to make sure your house is in order.
Chris, how do you think the Health Care Act is going to affect restaurant workers?
Well, Poppy, I think it'll be daunting a little bit at first because it's a new system. Some of the restaurants who are employ more than 50 people will be a little worried. And I think that in the end, it's going to be real positive because pre-existing is going to be knocked out, which has hindered me quite a bit. It's going to also give people access for a lot of just preventative care, which is the number one thing that our nation as a whole is bad about, and which restaurant people who are so busy and think of themselves as so indestructible very frequently just won't seek medical care because they don't have time or don't have much money and they don't have reasonable ways to set up doctor relationships. So I think that in the end, as we just kind of consider basic preventative health care, I think it'll build good habits and it will help people get healthier and hopefully avoid situations that kind of spiral out of control.
Walk us through what your governmental experience has been in trying to just access some basic health care for yourself.
Well, basic health care came from meeting a friend who she got me the tip to go to the Musician's Clinic, which was lucky because, like, I'm a cultural ambassador, I guess they said.
Chris, for people who don't know about the New Orleans Musician's Clinic, can you explain a little bit about what that organization is?
Well, they're a nonprofit part of the LSU health system. Their office is located on St. Charles Avenue, right across the street on the same side of the street as Superior Grill.
Oh, okay.
They typically help musicians, you know, because they often live in a cash economy. They're not always getting their income reported, and they don't have any sort of collective company health care because they show up and just work gigs.
Yeah.
So they're all self-employed. So it's a difficult thing, and they just saw so many musicians, young and old, fall by the wayside not getting proper health care. Cooks, waiters, bartenders can fall into that category too. And we probably as a restaurant industry need to find a model that could be based on like the Musician's Clinic. But they do a wonderful work in seeing people and helping people obtain health care. There's a lot of rudimentary things that I qualified for, but I never knew because I'd never been on my ass with a tea kettle before. You know, I'd never known what it was like to not be able to afford stuff.
Do you see some hope on the horizon? What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to move to Oregon. My small family lives out there. They have expanded Medicaid, which Bobby Jindal did not do in Louisiana. But really, the question is not Medicaid for me so much, Poppy, because to get my knees fixed, if I'm on Medicaid and waiting for it to be free, I would wait in Louisiana 2 years.
Oh, my God. gosh.
If so I qualified for Medicaid, which I don't. In Oregon, they say it's going to be different, but I don't know for sure that that will be true. So my family and I feel like the best option is to buy insurance in the new CARE Act when I can qualify. Of course, I'll have to become an Oregon resident and stay out there for at least the year to do that. We'll just have to hope for the best, because the best thing for me is to get this done as soon as possible. But with all the new things and trying to get qualified and all that, which I'm not qualified for in Oregon yet, March would be the earliest that I'll be able to get my first knee done. They don't let you do both knees at once, so then you got to rehab and wait. So I'll probably won't get done until around October of next year.
Well, we'll miss you, but you're intending on coming back to New Orleans?
Well, life is very mysterious. I love New Orleans. I've given my heart to the place for 22 years, and it's my home, so I hope so. But of all the places in the world to wind up, Portland, Oregon has a lot of the same DIY food spirit, great food scene. I love wine, as people know, but I've never really been around vineyards, so that will be exciting and a new thing to learn about. You know, you just have to hope that you put good karma in the bank and you try not to make too many extraneous withdrawals. And when you really need to make a soul withdrawal from the bank of karma, you hope that it's there for you, you know?
Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing your really personal story with us. And I want you to know all the Louisiana Eats listeners are going to join me in rooting for you, because we can't wait to see you back at that kitchen stove.
Oh, well, thanks, Poppy. I can't wait to get back, too. You know, when you're part of the circus like I've been for so long, you miss your crew. You know, when you get to work doing what you do, that's the joy in life. To me, it's not really going to work. It's a joy. So I want my joy back so I can be a good little bodhisattva chef and make make my diners happy.
Thanks, Chris. Chris DeBar, once and hopefully future great chef. Chef Ryan Hughes is our official Louisiana Eats culinary consultant. He's a classically trained chef who always has a new flavor up his sleeve for us. So, Ryan, what you got today?
Today I brought with me a wonderful herb that I actually I find out front of my house on the levee in Algiers Point, and that is culantro.
Culantro?
Exactly. Not cilantro, but culantro.
How do you spell that?
It's with a U, C-U-L-A-N-T-R-O. Some people call it stinkweed or duck tongue herb. How does that sound?
Not so good.
Not so good. Well, you find it in a lot of Asian and Latin American grocery stores now. The Asians use it on top of soups for their pho's and their noodle dishes and into curries too. And the Latinos use it in their different salsas. So they'll make like almost like a salsa verde with culantro. Or sofritos, too, which is popular in the Puerto Rican cuisines.
Let me ask you this. When you're looking for it in that grocery store, are you going to find it in little bunches like you find cilantro or parsley?
That's correct. And the culantro leaves are long and they're not shaped like the parsley or the cilantro leaves at all. So they're long, skinny, and with their name being the sawtooth or long coriander, that should give you a hint to its shape, too.
That is fascinating. So how do you use it?
Last time I used it, I did a cantaloupe and a culantro salad. A lot of chefs use different types of chicories in their melon salads or whatnot. And I thought that it's got the taste and the texture. And it's just really beautiful and bright and green. And so I made like a really loose, like kind of rice wine vinaigrette with a little bit of ginger in it. Took fresh cantaloupe or melons or whatnot, kind of diced it up. And then right before I served it, tossed it in the vinaigrette and then just folded the culantro with actually some fresh mint and some Thai basil into it. And when you chop it up a little bit, so it's not in the long, stringy whole herb itself, the plant, people don't recognize and they don't know what they're eating, but they always question you about it. Like, that was a really great salad, chef, but what was that in there? And that's when those lights go off above their head, and then I introduce them to that herb.
What is the difference in flavor between cilantro and culantro?
Culantro has a stronger, more pungent flavor than cilantro. A lot of people say, oh, I hate cilantro because it tastes soapy, and people mm-hmm. use that terminology a lot with it. I don't know why. I think it's the way that some people's taste buds are wired.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them, you know, and that goes
neither.
Exactly with a lot of different ingredients that our chefs use. Is we don't know how people are going to react to it, and that's half the fun. But some people, they don't like it. So I've never gotten the soapy thing from the culantro. I've been using it actually more than cilantro recently, so it's neat.
Well, and I guess it's free if it's on the levee.
And it's free.
Can I meet you on the levee sometime soon?
Oh, that's a date, Poppy. I'll take you up on that one.
Okay. Chef Ryan Hughes of the New Orleans Pop-Up Purlieu and our Louisiana Eats culinary consultant. Molly Kimball is always coming up with new ways to get people to make important lifestyle changes and improve their health by making smart eating choices. She's a registered dietitian, and one of her latest pet projects is a collaboration with Ochsner Health Systems, a free service called Eat Fit NOLA. Molly, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So, Molly, let's start off by explaining exactly what Eat Fit NOLA is.
Like you said, it's a free service that we're offering to every restaurant in the New Orleans area. And we're able to do it for free because Ochsner, of course, is giving us the time and the resources to do it. But we basically work with the chefs, the restaurant owners, to either identify the existing menu items they have that are nutritious. And if they don't have them, we'll work with their chefs to develop and create these menu items that still work with the framework and the kind of the theme and the feel of their menu and their restaurant.
Well, I'd like to know a little bit more about how Ochsner fits into this.
I've worked there with Ochsner and Elmwood Fitness Center for about 14 years now. And starting out, it was one-on-one client-based. So, you know, hour and a half intensive sessions, giving clients the education to make these healthier choices. About 2 years ago, our CEO came to me and said, how can we have a broader impact on the community? What can we do to have a bigger effect on people's lives? And so this was actually what came of that.
Tell us about which restaurants are participating and how we can find out who they are.
So we've got a lot. We've got about 20 on board. We have about 20 more that are coming on board in the next month or two. We have Muriel's was one of our very first ones, Vega Tapas, Yield Collagen. We have Apolline Patois. We have Fury's out in Metairie. We have Detali's on the West Bank, Dakota on the North Shore. So we've got all different price points, all different areas in town, Huckleberry's out in River Ridge. So a big, diverse group, and any restaurant is eligible for it.
Now, when restaurants sign up to participate, what's required of them?
We first kind of look at their menu. We see what looks like it might fit our criteria. We ask them to give us the recipes. That's not always as easy as it sounds, too, because a lot of times the recipes are in the owner's head or the chef's head. They've never actually been written down. We have interns who will actually go to the restaurant and work with that chef and measure out as they're doing each dish to help kind of gather that recipe information. We also have had recipes that come to me on napkins, on sticky notes, you know, handwritten, I mean, in any shape or fashion, but we just want it to be as easy as possible for the restaurant. So we try to do everything we can to break down some of those barriers. Then we have the software. We do the nutritional analysis. We use the American Heart Association's upper limit for sodium and saturated fat. But then we actually take it even further. We say no white carbs, so no white pastas, any of that kind of stuff, and less than a teaspoon of added sugar. And then we have the calorie cap. So when we do the nutritional analysis and we see what might be kicking it up too much, and then we work back and forth, and sometimes they say, nah, I don't want to make that change. Other times they say, yes, that's fine. You know, that's not going to change the integrity of the dish.
Salt is also a big issue.
Oh, man, that is probably what drives it up the most. That is one of the hardest things. And it's fortunately, it's one of the easiest things to change. you know, because that's not a real hard thing. And a lot of times salt might be added right at the end at the finish. So to make it eat fit NOLA, we just don't add that extra dash of salt. But the unfortunate thing is some of our seafood is naturally high in sodium.
Mm.
And that just kills me because, you know, the shrimp, the crab meat, you know, those are so lean, they're so low calorie, but they drive our sodium up.
So once you're in the door, you're working on the menus, I understand that there's another element to this where the restaurant owners and the employees themselves get personally involved.
They do. And it's interesting that we've had actually some of our owners, some of our chefs, some of the wait staff, once they start to see these different changes, and especially the chefs, once they start to see what the difference is that they're in their cooking and they actually start to implement it in their own diets, they're seeing that impact on their own health as well.
You know, people often tell me that the healthy meal option on a menu is often not appealing because if they're going out to eat, it's their intent to be there to splurge. So you can lead a horse to water, Molly, but you can't make them eat healthy.
Interestingly, a lot of our dishes that fit Eat Fit NOLA are not even the poultry or seafood. You know, a lot of times when we're looking at the menu, it's the beef dishes. We have fillets that fit into our Eat Fit NOLA. We have the beef tenderloin salad. We have the pork dishes, lamb sirloin. These things that people don't realize are low in saturated fat, and we can easily work these into the Eat Fit NOLA dishes.
So as you do your New Orleans dine around, what are some of your favorite dishes? Describe them for me.
Well, I would say just last night we were at Vega Tapas, and he has a pescado fresco, which is, you know, a grilled Gulf fish, and it originally came with mashed potatoes. Chef Glenn Ho changed it to a roasted cauliflower puree. So that is one of my favorites. He also has a coriander tuna there. I would say at La Thai Uptown,
yes.
Her spicy Thai beef salad, Diana Chauvin, love, love, love that. And that was always what I got there, the Eat Fit NOLA version of it. It's just a little bit less sodium, a little bit less sugar and the dressings. Very, very minimal tweaks. But again, we've got a beef dish there. At Muriel's, they have a beef tenderloin salad. Love that. Patois has a hanger steak and green papaya salad.
Yum. Are the restaurateurs keeping stats on the percentage of sales on those Eat Fit NOLA dishes?
It depends on how their computer system is set up. Some of them have it to where they know and they're tracking all the different menu items that are sold. The pescado fresco, that fish that I mentioned at Vega Tapas, when he made that Eat Fit NOLA, it actually went up 60% in sales. So he was thrilled, you know, when he looked at
wow.
that.
Wow.
Not all of them do keep the stats. Furies and Metairie, actually, we created an entire new Eat Fit NOLA menu, and they are just beyond thrilled with how great the sales are on that.
Well, currently, Eat Fit NOLA is a program that's only active within the greater New Orleans area. So how can our Louisiana Eats listeners in other cities become engaged in your work?
Do you know, one of our counterparts at Ochsner in Baton Rouge, one of the dietitians there, has recently reached out to me, and she is going to be launching Eat Fit BR.
Yay!
Yes, I know. So, and like we said, the more the merrier, the more places that we can get on board, the better. So we've got Eat Fit BR just around the corner. Hopefully we'll keep on growing.
Molly, exciting work, and congratulations on the expansion. So come back and visit with us again soon, please.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you.
Molly Kimball of Ochsner Health Systems, Eat Fit NOLA. When we come back, Tableau chef Ben Thibodeau tells us how Eat Fit NOLA has changed his life. Don't go anywhere. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Lafayette native Ben Thibodeau trained at the John Foltz Culinary Institute and eventually found his way to Dickie Brennan's door. In the 10 years he's been with Dickie's operations, Ben's worked his way up from garde-manger at the Dickie Brennan Steakhouse to the esteemed position of executive chef at Dickie's newest restaurant, tableau. Ben developed some questionable eating habits along the way, but fortunately, Tableau is part of a new program called Eat Fit NOLA. With nutritionist Molly Kimball's help, Ben began a regime that dramatically changed his health for the better.
The restaurant had only been open for a couple of months at this point. I have a little meeting set up with Molly Kimball with Eat Fit NOLA, who wanted to come in, go through all of our restaurant's menus, and just kind of showcase things that were listed on the menu that fit into the regimen that you're supposed to adhere to. So I sat down, had a conversation with her, and then just coincidentally went to see my doctor. I hadn't been in about 4 years, so it had been a while. And she was great, really awesome, Jenny Kuo at Touro. I just had some heredity things. And after talking with her, she's like, you know, your blood pressure's kind of high. I'm like, well, I'm a little bit nervous. You know, I haven't been to the doctor in a year or so. She's like, and we're going to do some blood work and stuff and check you out. So sugar comes back great. Cholesterol comes back pretty high, like 150 over 90 something. Pretty bad, actually. And she's like, well, with your heredity and everything else in your family. She's like, I want to start you on medication. I'm like,
how old are you?
34. I go home from that and I'm like, hey, you know, I don't want to do that. I call her back and I'm like, doc, you know, I really thought about this. Give me 3 months and let me try to do this naturally. You know, let me diet and exercise because I know what the bad things are and I know what the good things are. So I know what to avoid. And she's like, well, I'm going to call him in anyway. And I'm like, doc, I'm trying to be honest with you and have a good relationship. You can call him in all day long and I'm just not going to take him. I said, so just give me a shot. So I go into the doctor and I give her my plan and I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go vegan, pescatarian. I'm going to watch all my fats. I'm going to watch my sodium. And I said, just you wait, you know. Like,
now, was this a coincidence that this was happening simultaneously at the same? So Molly was the one who was actually able to make this advice to you, mm-hmm. and help you create the plan.
Exactly. So I called Molly and I was running late on recipes to give to her for Eat Fit NOLA. So I called her up and I'm like, can we talk about something that doesn't have to do necessarily with Tableau and the Eat Fit NOLA menu? And she's like, no, sure. Yeah. What do you got? So I told her and she's like, that's great. She was so excited about it. And I never forget. I'm like, I feel like I should be paying you for this because I know you get paid to do this.
Molly's a great cheerleader.
So great. Yeah. I felt so good after talking with her on the phone. And she gave me really good advice and told me a couple of different products to look for and start using that would help out a lot. And really kind of talk through a couple of things that I thought were misconceptions, put it that way. So my main goal was to get my cholesterol down and my blood pressure down as quickly as possible. And I told her, I'm like, this is where I'm at right now. This is kind of my plan. My first week, I'm never going to eat a meal till I'm full. I'm just going to eat like half of what I would normally eat. And I'm going to try to cut out all those fats and fried stuff and try to eat fewer animals and more vegetables and good grains and stuff like that. I told people at work about it, you know, and they're like, you're never going to do this. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, who knows me? Like,
well,
in this
before
building?
This, what were the sorts of things that your friends at the restaurant and coworkers were accustomed to watching you scarf?
Oh, I mean, I can put down a cheeseburger quicker than anybody I've ever seen. Honestly, no problem. I'll take that challenge any day of the week. But just eating what I wanted to whenever I wanted to. So I'd have a cheeseburger for lunch, and then for dinner, a big steak or whatever. Or even at home, it just no holds barred, you know. I ate whatever I wanted. At the time, I remember thinking, like, it's probably not the best thing that I should be doing. No, I'm going to have to change something at some point in time. So I started my first trip to the doctor. It was about 235 pounds, which I thought was, yeah, you know.
How tall are you?
6 foot. And I think they recommend that for my age at 6 foot, I should weigh like 178. I don't want to be 50 pounds lighter. I feel like the wind take me away if I did that, you know. So I just started thinking about what I was eating and just making smarter choices and better decisions. And that's really, bottom line, that was it, just making better choices, you know. Instead of having fried pork chop sandwich for lunch, which is always great, you know.
Yes.
I have like a piece of seared redfish with a little bit of vegetables or what have you. You know, something just a better choice. My first time back, 2 weeks in, I had lost 12 pounds. My blood pressure had gone down 20 points both ways. My bad cholesterol had gone down 40 points.
In 2 weeks.
In about 2 weeks. Now, I am not like the exercise kind of person. Mm-hmm. I don't do that, but I was just very aggressive with my diet to the point of, you know, there was times, and there's still times where I'm like, I'm hungry. But now at those times I go for smarter choices than I do, you know, a banana instead of fried shrimp. No, they don't taste the same even remotely, but that's not just what it's all about for me anymore. It's not just that factor.
Okay, Ben, so how long has it been in total now?
Over 3 months.
And so the 2 weeks in, you'd lost 17 pounds.
12 pounds.
12 pounds. Where are you at now?
So I'm hovering right around that 210, anywhere from 209, 210, somewhere around there. And then, you know, after like Saints games, it might be 212, 215. it all just kind of depends.
And has this had an effect on any of your coworkers?
Every day, people are like, oh, my God, look how much weight you lost. I never cared about the weight. That was never a factor for me. It was everything that was going on inside. It's the silent things that you don't see. I knew I didn't want to be skinny because that would be awful. And I still feel that way, but at least it gives me a barometer that I am making smarter choices. I am making smarter decisions. You know, if I were to balloon up again back to like 230, 240, well, then pretty safe to say that I'm making bad choices.
Ben, what are the permanent changes that being involved with Eat Fit NOLA has caused in your life?
It's definitely given me some support. Molly's been awesome throughout my health issues. But it's also reminded me, like, there's a support system there for people that want it. Like, you're not out there just on your own surrounded by cheeseburgers and french fries. There's people there to help you, too.
So any particular dishes that you've changed up even at home for good?
Absolutely. We do a lot more whole wheat pastas and things like that at home. Try to stay away from the heavy beef and pork and stuff like that. We really are eating a lot more seafood and shrimp and fish, and that's great. For instance, ever heard of shrimp and potato stew? Have you ever heard of that?
Shrimp and potato stew?
Shrimp and potato stew.
That's something from down the bayou,
oh, yeah.
Huh?
Way down the bayou. It's something we used to eat at the hunting camp. I never forget and loved it. So Idaho potatoes, good fatty pork smoked sausage loaded with shrimp, you know, that's like working food. So last night we did something a little bit different, did some sweet potatoes. Diced and blanched some sweet potatoes and then got some shrimp, peeled them down, made a little shrimp stock. So I blanched my little diced sweet potato in the shrimp stock and then used that liquid, added more sweet potato to it, took the little bites out, added the onion and celery and garlic and fresh thyme and boiled it and then burr mixed it up, strained it really, really good, and then added my smoked turkey sausage, which is obviously taking the pork out there. Added the diced potato back. Instead of using a bunch of salt, I just hit it with a little bit of cane vinegar, kind of bring those flavors forward a little bit, and then finished it with a little bit of, I cheated a little bit, but it was so good. I just put a little bit of Borson on top, crumbled some on top.
Oh, a little bit of Borson.
Just
it
a little.
Can't be that bad.
Yeah, I was looking out for my wife too. I'm like, we'll just put a little bit there. And then some toasted pumpkin seeds, had these roasted kale chips, some roasted onion. Plus, all you good Gulf shrimp in there. So shrimp, turkey sausage, good sweet potato. I mean, it's great. It was great.
Good job, Ben.
Thank you.
You'll have to send me that recipe and we'll put it on our website for our listeners, okay?
Absolutely.
Keep us posted. Now everybody's watching you, so no backsliding.
Yeah, I got no wiggle room anymore.
Chef Ben Thibodeau of Tableau, eating healthy with help from Eat Fit NOLA. Chris Jay is a food blogger for the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau. His weekly blog covering the food scene in northwestern Louisiana can be found every Tuesday on 20by49.com. Chris is also our North Louisiana Eats roving reporter. So, Chris, what's been going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, Poppy, I know you're interested in places that have a heritage and that, you know, maybe are disappearing from the map and the landscape of Louisiana food. And I wanted to talk to you about some places that we call catfish camps up in northwest Louisiana. This is going to be a really rural restaurant that's been around 30, 40, 50 years, most of them. It's going to be located on a body of water, like a lake, and it's going to be populated full of locals eating catfish almost all the time.
Wow.
Usually the word inn is in the title. One of my favorites is a place called Pelican Inn in Vivian. Another local favorite is a place called Wilson's Bistineau Inn in Doyleen, Louisiana. They're not inns, just basically a cafeteria entirely dedicated to fried catfish.
Now, I want a little geographic placement in this because we are all familiar with the big cities, Shreveport, Monroe, Alexandria.
Right.
Where are these little towns in relation to that?
Well, Vivian, for example, is right on Caddo Lake, which is one of the most beautiful lakes, and it's the border between northwest Louisiana and Texas. So if you wanted to really get away and really explore the wilderness, go to Vivian, Louisiana, stop in the Pelican Inn and eat catfish that was just caught out of Caddo Lake.
It's even wild-caught
catfish. Right, absolutely.
Not farmed.
Exactly.
Hurrah.
And a lot of these places are still run by the original proprietors. The one that I'm most fond of is a place called Shockley's Fish and Fixins. The word fixins is in the title. How can you beat that? You get enough accoutrement to be a meal in itself. You get pickled green tomatoes. You get fried chunks of biscuit dough. This is the only place I've seen that. You get a table bowl of coleslaw. You get fries. All this stuff comes to you before you order. And then you order either catfish, shrimp, or a mixed platter, and it's all you can eat, period. So if you order catfish, they're just going to keep bringing it to you. What I love about Shockley's, and please suspend your disbelief, it's sort of the Middendorf's of northwest Louisiana. The catfish is really crispy, thin, and small pieces. We're talking about 24 or 30 pieces of catfish to a plate. It's almost like eating nachos.
Yum!
You know, you're just like munching away at these airy, fluffy, light little wafers of catfish.
And is this lunch and dinner, or what is it?
Shockley's is dinner only. And I should say, Shockley's is in Elm Grove, Louisiana.
And where is that?
You got to put some gravel in your travel, sister. You got to know where to find Elm Grove, Louisiana. It's just south of Bossier City. So let's say if you were traveling up Highway 1 from Natchitoches to Shreveport-Bossier, you would pass through Elm Grove. But Shockley's has been open for 38 years. You don't stay open 38 years by being subpar. Their catfish is terrific.
Wow, that sounds divine. What's the price point like?
It's between, let's say, $11 to $15 a person, but it's only open for dinner, and it's all you can eat. And that's one of the things that people sometimes grumble about. They're like, well, I want to take my five-year-old, and, you know, he can't eat 30 pieces of catfish. But I love Shockley's, and if you get a chance to stop in, say hi to Jimmy Shockley. I mean, he's a treasure. He's been frying that catfish for 30-something years.
Our Louisiana Eats roving reporter, Chris J. You can learn more about North Louisiana's food scene by visiting Chris at 20by49.com or by visiting us at LouisianaEatsRadio.com. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we'll meet Tom Nickel, Tanqueray Gin's master distiller.
I've always found that the best nosers are women. We have some young girls in the lab that they come in and they just get it right away. But we don't let them on our panel yet. We do it again. If they get it right again, then, well, it's okay, that's two times, then fine. But we make them do it again, and if they're 100% a third time.
Yeah, there you go. Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org and louisianaeatsradio.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company and LCI Workers Comp. Our media sponsor is Louisiana Life Magazine, the magazine of a great state. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Thanks to executive producer Thomas Walsh, consulting producer Margaret Howes, and sound engineer Guy Mulladew. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time.
Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.